Welcome to Sound Off with Lewis Woodard.
How can you not know who Lewis is? Oh, my God. You hear his voice, you recognize who he is.
Wrapping up the day in sports in a fast-paced, high-energy atmosphere. You got an opinion? Bring it strong or don't bring it at all.
I can say anything I want. That's the beauty of this country.
Dial 843-652-3776 or Sound Off on Twitter at 1003TheTeam.
This is a special person.
Now, your host, Lewis Woodard.
We are back. Apologies for not having a show yesterday, but life and cars and that kind of thing, they're kind of important. So if there's ever the question, should I risk something, the answer is probably no. Like, if you have to ask yourself that question, probably not. So Brian and I stayed home, and we stayed safe yesterday. We hope that you guys got through these flooding problems and are getting through them fine. Everything of mine ended up being safe except for my laptop, because Aaron and I combined for the bright idea of putting the tailgate show outdoors during a hurricane on Saturday. But you know what? It looked awesome on Facebook. It looked great on Facebook when myself and Joe Catanacci were out there in the middle of a hurricane underneath an 8x8 tent. But other than that, I count myself as very lucky. I hope you guys are doing well as well. Now, something that, you know, some things you're right and some things you're wrong. When you're paid essentially to come on the radio and have an opinion every day, you win some, you lose some. One that I lost very big was saying Duke didn't have a good enough defense to go to the Final Four last year. They end up winning the national championship. So, you know, sometimes opinions are wrong. One thing I was right on, thus far at least, is that Josh Norman was going to be in line for a massive payday and was going to emerge as one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL. I took a look at what he had done against premier receivers in the second half of last season, his size, his speed, and the fact that he was in a big-time contract year, that he was really going to showcase himself. Now, I didn't think he was going to have two pick sixes in four games and have two other interceptions and be this dominant to the point where his riding the horse football celebration is becoming a national story and people are asking whether he's the top cornerback in football. That I didn't quite see it going that high, but myself and a lot of other people were a little critical of the Panthers for not signing him to a bigger deal over the offseason, saying, this guy is about to blow up big. Try and get him while the price tag is lower and he's more affordable. And I had no idea what the Panthers had offered him in the offseason. And we just saw with a piece from Jonathan Jones of the Charlotte Observer, an outstanding reporter in Charlotte, what the former Chanticleer Josh Norman was actually offered in the offseason. He was offered a five-year deal totaling $35 million. Now, NFL contracts are at times maddening because you don't know how much money is guaranteed versus non-guaranteed. You don't know how easy it is for a team to cut you and not pay you any of that money. There are roster bonuses. They're a hot mess, right? It's often days and weeks afterward that you find out what a contract actually means. Like, we're about to see how quickly Colin Kaepernick's $100 million contract goes away when the 49ers decide that what's happening each and every Sunday isn't worth that much. They're just going to tear it up, right? And it's going to, you know, the question is how much of his $100 million is he actually going to get? So with Norman, we know that he was offered 5 years, 35, not how it was structured. But $35 million, I mean, think about that. I mean, I know that a lot of times with athlete money and athlete contract money, particularly, we get a little jaded and we just lose concept of it, right? Because none of us are coming close to making that kind of money. So what is 35 versus, I don't know, Giancarlo Stanton's $320 million Marlins contract? I mean, that just seems ludicrous. That seems like a country's GDP I'm looking at. But with Josh Norman, he's 28 years old. So he is, in terms of raw athleticism, in his athletic prime right now. I mean, you start getting a step slow at around 30. So he's in his prime money-making window at a position that requires just raw athleticism. I mean, that is personal, being a cornerback out there, being asked to cover the best receiver on another team. I mean, not only do you have to have the skills, but you have to have the right mindset for it. I mean, you can keep somebody contained for an entire game and give up an 80-yard touchdown pass at the end and have not done your job. It's emotionally demanding. It's really intellectually demanding, and you have to have athleticism. It's a tough gig. And he's made $3 million over the course of his entire career. He has been a four-year pro in the NFL because he was a late-round draft pick. His deal is essentially 4 years, $3 million. He turned down this offseason $35 million. Now think about that. I know a lot of us struggle with coming up with these numbers, but $3 million on your left hand, $35 million on your right. He essentially, I mean, who... One of your bosses came up to you and was like, how would you like to make 10 times more money than you're making right now? I think all of us would be like, yeah, where do I sign? Not, you know what? I'm gonna be the best me that I've ever been this year, and you're going to have to pay me even more than 10 times more than you're paying me right now. That is what Josh Norman and his agent essentially told Dave Gettleman, the Panthers general manager, in the offseason. That offer, giving me 10 times more money than you've ever given me, is not good enough. I am going to bet on myself. And I do love that as a concept. I mentioned that as several times, whether it's Coastal Carolina University betting on itself joining the Sun Belt, whether it's Hunter Renfrow in high school betting on himself and deciding to walk on at Clemson versus taking scholarship offer to smaller programs. I think it's awesome when someone has that much conviction in themselves, in their abilities, that they will take a massive risk. Because no doubt about it, this is a massive risk for Josh Norman. He could have a catastrophic injury in his next game and have none of that $35 million contract that the Panthers offered him in the offseason, whereas if he had signed the dotted line, he probably would have gotten an $8 to $10 million signing bonus. That's life-changing wealth, regardless of what happened to his knee, what happened to his shoulder, anything that could possibly happen to a big-time cover corner that could limit his value after that. So, make no doubt about it, there is a lot of risk involved in what Josh Norman is doing right now. And as of right now, as of this minute, four games into the season, it looks like he has done the right thing. Because 5 years, $35 million, if you're wondering where that would rank among NFL cornerbacks, that would put him around the 15th highest paid corner in the league, with guys like Prince Amukamara for the Giants, Aqib Talib with the Broncos, Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie with the Giants. I mean, that's kind of the neighborhood you're in. Kareem Jackson with the Texans. Those kind of cornerbacks make that kind of money. And if that's not good enough for Josh Norman, you look at what the top five guys are making. Darrell Revis is making $16 million a year. Patrick Peterson's making $14 million a year. Fifth is about $12 million. So if $7 million isn't cutting it, the answer is, what do you pay Josh Norman? Especially after the season he's having, what's a legitimate offer? If what the Panthers gave him in the offseason, based on his abilities, he did not think was a legitimate and a fair offer, I mean, what is it going to be this offseason? He didn't even begin last year as a starter. This year he's beginning with two pick sixes in four games. I mean, that's what it's going to take. I mean, it sounds silly, but imagine somebody a year ago telling you Josh Norman might get a bigger contract than Luke Kuechly. And imagine your response. I mean, Luke Kuechly is getting 5 years, $60 million. That's 12 a year. That might be right in the window of what a team pays Josh Norman if he does not get hurt and he finishes this year playing at the level he's playing right now. It's absolutely insane, and I love to see someone betting on themselves and having success. And he seems to not be fazed at all by that pressure of turning down life-changing money, 10 times more than he's ever made in his life, just turning that down. And saying, you know what? That's close, but it's not cutting it. I can go out there and get more. And another thing with regard to defensive backs and payment that was funny. Last night, Monday Night Football, this was making a lot of the rounds today. I'm not sure if you guys were able to see it. But Cam Chancellor, who, of course, feels he is underpaid as well, going about it in a different way because he kind of has a contract that he just recently renegotiated and it's not good enough. Well, he decides to come back and play. Last night, he forces a critical fumble on the goal line. I'm not going to get into whether you're allowed to bat a ball out of bounds or not because I, like everybody else in America, did not know that rule last night. I'm not going to act like I did. And he is in his post-game interview on live television, and the always opinionated defensive end, Michael Bennett, just the equivalent of a photo bomb, audio bombs this and directs a message at Paul Allen, the owner of the Seahawks, and says, pay this man.
What does it mean to you to be back and to make a play like that, to not just save the game, but potentially your season?
It means a lot. You know, we fight. We fight till it's over. Till, you know, till the clock says zero. It's never over. We protect the blade of grass.
Pay him!
Paul Allen, like this, man.
17 richest man in the world.
Hard. We work hard together, man. Guys like that, we just a good unit together.
ESPN with that audio. Now, Brian tested me on whether Paul Allen was the 17th richest man in the world. You didn't think that Paul Allen, the owner of the Seattle Seahawks, had that kind of cash flow. You didn't think he did.
Yeah.
He's Microsoft money, man. He's on that Bill Gates team.
Yeah, but 17th in the world?
I looked it up. Forbes says that he has $17 billion, but his actual rank in the world, he's only the 26th wealthiest man in the world, Paul Allen, the owner of the Seahawks.
I mean, the reason I thought that is because I know whoever at number one is around $80 billion. So, I mean, you figure 17 notches down is...
Well, the narrative there is unstable, right? That Paul Allen has all this money, so he should pay Cam Chancellor. No, there's something called the salary cap. And by the way, it becomes a lot more difficult when you have a quarterback that's making $20 million this year and was making like $500K last year. Well, I guess Russell's big extension kicks in next year. That's when it gets really complicated.
I'd love for Paul Allen to be like, next time Michael Bennett's contracts come on, I'll be like, well, we're going to give Cam Chancellor the money we were going to give you since you want to pay him.
Yeah, I mean, in a cap sport, you can't just run around giving everybody what they're worth. You got to bargain with them. That was the entire offseason. I mean, not one person thought that Russell Wilson was going to hit the market because they weren't going to agree. It was, can the Seahawks shave any kind of pennies off of that deal that he and his agent want? I mean, if you go back and think about any franchise-level quarterback that's hit the market over the past 3 or 4 years, the only one that's been healthy and hit the market is Jay Cutler. And that was because Josh McDaniels didn't really want him. Josh McDaniels gets the job in Denver and tries to get Matt Cassel away from New England. All the other franchise-level quarterbacks had some kind of massive injury. I mean, Drew Brees, Peyton Manning. Carson Palmer, I guess, decided he was just done with the Bengals. He just walked away. He said, I would rather retire from football than play for you guys. They've been pretty good since then. He seems to be doing all right as well. But my point is that Russell Wilson was not going to be a free agent. The cap is just so restrictive, they had to just try and see if they could beat any more pennies out of him. And they finally got to the point where like, all right, he's probably mad. This is probably not cool. Let's just give him what he wants. That's how you have to operate. And I thought, speaking of betting, in terms of betting, the national media is definitely not betting on the Panthers to continue at this pace. Right now, they're 4-0. And what's really interesting is that a single NFL team, not a single NFL team last year was 4-0. Nobody made it to 4-0 last year. This year, the Panthers are in a decent-sized group of teams that have actually made it to 4-0. Packers, Broncos, Patriots, Falcons in their own division. And everyone is taking the Falcons way more seriously than the Panthers. One of the reasons, if you look at the Panthers' schedule they've played already, the combined one-loss record is 4-12 of the teams that they've played. If you look at the combined one-loss record of the rest of their schedule, it's 27-21 because you've got games against the 4-0 Packers, two against the 4-0 Falcons, and that doesn't even account for the fact that, say, the Cowboys are not going to be a 500 team in terms of talent when they see them again because they're probably going to have Romo and Dez on Thanksgiving when the Panthers play them. So the Panthers' schedule gets substantially more difficult, and Atlanta's, while it's very similar, their two crossover games that they have with the NFC West and the North are not anywhere near as difficult as the Panthers. The Panthers, out of the NFC West and the NFC North, they end up drawing the Seahawks and the Packers, whereas the Falcons, because of how bad they were last year, they draw the 49ers and Vikings. So that two-game swing is substantial. I mean, that could give the Falcons essentially two games on the Panthers if we're both looking at 4-0 teams right now. But you do look at the Panthers stretch, and everyone that started off the beginning of the season said, well, they need to get to the bye week at least 3-1 to have a shot at the playoffs, because after that it gets rugged. It gets real rough after the bye week. So no Panthers this weekend. They're on bye. Then after that, they have Seattle, the Eagles, the Colts, and the Packers. That was the miserable four-game stretch that everyone said. That's just four games of hell. If they make it out of that above 500, count our lucky stars, basically. Now, that Seattle game, that's rugged. I mean, they got Cam Chancellor back. They're 2-0 with him. And unfortunately, the Panthers don't seem that great at the one thing that Seattle is having a hard time with right now, and that's a pass rush. I mean, the Seattle offensive line last night on Monday Night Football looked as bad as any offensive line I've seen in football, like this year, any level. Like, I realize that their offensive line is professional going against professional pass rushers, but in terms of looking overmatched, if Russell Wilson was like a drop-back passer, like a classic Dan Marino-esque statue, he would have been sacked like 30 times last night. I mean, his best pass plays were just on, like, spinning 360 degrees, running 20 yards back, 10 yards forward, throwing off 1 foot. And you look at those things, and you do wonder with Pete Carroll, how much is him just getting too fancy? Because all of these offensive linemen they've got, it, like the graphic on the screen was like converted defensive player. It's like, well, no wonder this guy's having a hard time protecting Russell Wilson. This is his first year playing offensive line. But the Panthers don't have the front four, the front seven that really gets after the passer. Like, they don't have that Greg Hardy guy anymore. I mean, Dallaire was nice. Sign him off Washington's practice squad, and he gives you 2 sacks on Sunday. But I don't know that they have the goods to really get to Russell Wilson. Now, after that, the Eagles seem like they're looking for a reason to totally collapse on Chip Kelly because he's overbearing and asks them for urine samples every morning. Andrew Luck has a partially separated shoulder, trying to throw, trying to play against the Texans right now, but you have no idea how his health is going to look. Yeah, and the Packers are going to be tough. That game at least is in Charlotte. Like, I'm, you know, I still look at the Panthers, and I would guess right now I would bet on them being a wild card. I would bet on them being a wild card. Atlanta, that two-game swing where they don't have to play Green Bay and they don't have to play Seattle. Instead, they get the 49ers and the Vikings in that two-game swing. That's substantial. Like, I think that swings the course of the division race. But I think the Panthers would be good enough to get a wild card. Now, there is probably no harder job in sports right now, or at least a job that I don't envy. Let's say that. There are some tough jobs in sports. Here's a job that I don't envy. Ray Tanner, athletic director for the University of South Carolina. I'll explain why next. This is Sound Off.
Welcome back to Sound Off. Call 843-652-3776 and get loose.
Now, I said before the break that there really is no way to measure, like, who has the worst job in sports. Like, in terms of ones that you would not want. You wouldn't want to trade places with that person. And I would not really want to trade places with Ray Tanner at all. Like, he's making a nice paycheck. You know, he's making six figures. That's nice and everything. But he is looking at a football team right now and a coach that's 70 and trying to figure out how do you build for the future in a way that is tasteful and honors what a legend like Steve Spurrier did in the past. Right, I think everybody looks at it and says Spurrier deserves on some level to have a say for when things are done with, for when he is done coaching football. And he has, whether it's 2 to 3 years, whether it's the 5-year plan, I mean, he's always trying to say, like, hey, look, I'm way younger than the typical 70-year-old. Look at me work out. But with this South Carolina team right now, 0-8 in the SEC is a more likely possibility than 3-5 and going to a bowl game. I mean, that is a more likely possibility. You look at the remaining games left on their schedule. Florida, man, they look good on Saturday. Tennessee, that's one of the few unranked teams left on South Carolina's schedule. That's not kind to close the season. Tennessee is one of 4 teams in the country that have had a double-digit lead in every game this year. It's the only one that's not undefeated. If Tennessee were a little bit older and a little bit better coach from an X's and O's perspective, they could easily be an undefeated team that's ranked top 10 in the country right now. They just have really shot themselves in the foot. But that doesn't mean they're going to do it against South Carolina. They beat them 2 years in a row. Vanderbilt has a defense ranked in the 20s nationally. And unlike South Carolina, Vanderbilt winning an SEC game this year is progress, right? They haven't lost their team because their team didn't have expectations. Like, they can play the, hey, we're getting better every week card. And you better believe that they're looking at South Carolina as the week that they get the first SEC win for their coach, Derek Mason. It just does not get any easier. I mean, you assume that they're going to beat the Citadel, and there's Clemson after that. I mean, this is way more likely to be a bloodbath season for South Carolina. Like a 3-9, 1-7. or 4-8, 1-7, 3-9, 0-8. I mean, those are distinct possibilities, way more so than winning, than going to a bowl game this year. And Ray Tanner has to look at that and basically say, Coach Spurrier, what's the plan? What are we doing here? And I don't know how they can give that program a facelift, essentially with someone in charge who's looking like he's on his way out. Like, I don't know. Do you ask Spurrier to fire all of his assistants? And even then, how long does that last, right? Does he keep John Hoke and clean out the rest of them? I mean, well, that's the same staff that went 11-2 3 years in a row. In large part, I guess Ellis Johnson's gone. But it's just, there is no easy fix to that. And this week, they're trying to prepare for a football game. And you guys all know how devastated Columbia has been, continues to be. I mean, they don't even know if they can play the game this weekend. This is Ray Tanner, athletic director for South Carolina.
There have been lots of discussions in the last few hours that there's conversations about possibly moving the game to another city. More than one is being talked about at this point. I don't want to get into specifics, but certainly a game at LSU is not out of the realm of possibility as well. Again, our intentions are to stay on schedule and play here in Columbia, but it's not a definite. We'll continue to monitor it.
I think they want extra time to figure out how to stop Leonard Fournette. I don't know, though. I was thinking about this. Like, athletes in their sport who are absolutely dominant right now, like, if I just say that out loud, I'm thinking Rodgers, LeBron, like Ronda Rousey. Like, Leonard Fournette, man, he comes to the top of your mind when you think about dominance in an individual sport right now for college football. He's averaging 215 yards rushing per game. The guy's got 860 on the ground in four games. And how do you watch film and how to stop him? Like, I guess you get a look at LSU's blocking schemes, but I mean, he's just going to run over you. Like, more than most backs that make you miss, Fournette just will run right through you. And I don't know that any degree of extra preparation, like, I don't know that there's any benefit to that. I mean, I think it would be really neat for Columbia if they could have that game in Williams-Brice. I mean, I saw the pictures. I also saw pictures of Conway's football stadium. It was crazy underwater. Like, you could just see goalposts sticking out. It's insane. I mean, if there's ever a game that South Carolina needs a good, robust crowd support in Williams-Brice Stadium, it's this one. I mean, they need a reason for optimism right now. And LSU, while Fournette has been insanely impressive, has not really been all that impressive as a team. I mean, they barely escape against Mississippi State. They beat Syracuse, who is not good, by a touchdown. I mean, they do not have that one win that tells you, okay, LSU is a dominant team. They're 4-0. They have the best individual player in the country, and they're leading a program that has had a lot of success recently, so that's why you see them high in the polls. But the one thing they're very good at, South Carolina is terrible at. That's defending against the run. I mean, South Carolina, as of right now, is 102nd in the country in terms of rushing yards per play against. So they give up 4.9 a carry to the average running back that they've seen this year. Leonard Fournette, nothing about him is average. So that's what they've got to deal with this weekend, in addition to not knowing if or when the game is going to be played. I mean, I saw on our friend SportsTalkSC.com, their website, that Sean Elliott the offensive line coach for South Carolina had to relocate his family because of flooding, and G.A. Mangus has standing water in his house. Like, that's the quarterback's coach. I mean, you got members of your staff that have to leave their homes, and you've got LSU coming to town that weekend. Not ideal. Looking for some glimmer of hope to turn around the season. Something. I mean, Missouri dominated them on both lines of scrimmage and won with a true freshman quarterback starting his first game by two scores. It wasn't competitive. I mean, that is a really, really tough jam for them to be in. And, you know, you add that on Ray Tanner's plate with the fact that the guy that he handpicked to run his baseball program has not had the results that he had when he was leading it himself. That's a tough situation. And Frank Martin, his basketball coach, that's a make or break year for Frank Martin as well. I mean, they have a very talented backcourt, and at some point you can't say, okay, well, he's recruiting well. You have to say this is his fourth year. They need to start making the NCAA tournament. So a tough gig, one that I would not want to trade places with. 843-652-3776. You have thoughts on that, or perhaps a job you wouldn't want to trade places with. Interested in hearing your thoughts. Now, we'll take calls in that next segment if anyone wants to weigh in. 843-652-3776. There was, if there is any way to make death lighthearted, there is a Yankees fan who in her obituary took a real shot. Took a real shot at Alex Rodriguez. As we enter the wild card round tonight, should have a fun topic involving that. The one athlete on your favorite team that you would like to disown. That's coming up next in Sound Off. Sound Off is presented in part by Gordon Biersch. Fill your stein this fall with a draft of Fest Beer at Gordon Biersch. The Fest Beer is an amber lager with a slightly sweet toasted maltiness balanced by the subtle spice of German Hersbrucker hops. Like every Gordon Biersch beer, the Fest Beer is a German-style lager crafted on-site using the finest malted barley hops, yeast, and pure filtered water. Gordon Biersch, located at the corner of Howard Avenue and Never Street in Market Common. Lewis Woodard, Brian Nelson, hanging out with you guys. 843-652-3776 is the number. Put this up as a fun topic on our Facebook page, facebook.com/1003theteam. A lifelong Yankees fan, in her obituary, at the end of September, wrote Mrs. Fowler, and she wrote this, was a former member of Cranford First Aid Squad and a lifelong Yankees fan, with the exception of Alex Rodriguez. If there's any way to make an obituary lighthearted, it is taking a shot at Alex Rodriguez or anybody in sports. And it's funny to me because A-Rod is the ultimate example of the test for a sports fan, right? There is almost nothing likable that guy can do. I mean, there's nothing that he says that is trustworthy. Like Alex Rodriguez, I could watch him walk into this building right now, and he could be wearing a blue shirt, and I could say, Alex, what color is that shirt? And he would say blue, and I would look at it like I'd rub my eyes, like, wait a second, is he lying to me somehow? Like, I can't trust anything that guy says. And it's hard to like him, right? I mean, he hit the genetic lottery in terms of talent, and that wasn't good enough. He had to juice. He had to get caught juicing, and he had to continue juicing some more, and he had to get caught juicing, and so on. He just, it's really difficult to trust or like that guy. And last year, the Yankees spent their entire offseason trying to figure out ways to get out of his contract because they didn't want to pay him $30 million a year until 2017. And this year, he produces like an all-star, and he gets excellent fan support at Yankee Stadium. Everybody's forgiven him for his past offenses. It is the ultimate example of winning cures everything. Ultimate example of winning curing everything, except for Helen Fowler, devoted Yankees fan to all except Alex Rodriguez. 843-652-3776. And it got me to thinking, like, if you could disown one person on your favorite team or program at any point in time, I didn't really have to dig too deep on this one. Because I'm an aggressive North Carolina basketball fan. Like if I have two fandoms that get me riled up. One is the Carolina Panthers, the other is UNC Hoops. UNC Hoops more so than the other. That one's the one that's like written in stone. I couldn't change that if I tried.
Well, you could just disown the entire Hornets organization.
I could. Yeah, well, what the Bobcats did for the past 10, 15 years is kind of laughable. And sadly, their best player, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, looks like he's out for the entire year with a shoulder problem. Need surgery. They're going to be miserable again this year. I digress. For me, it's Larry Drew, their point guard, who he was supposed to be the sophomore or the junior starter rather, and be a team leader. And he ended up really not being that great on the floor. He wasn't fast enough or athletic enough to run Roy Williams' offense. And he couldn't hit jump shots, so it ruined the floor spacing when he was out there. And it was obvious that Kendall Marshall should have started, and Roy Williams gave him, as a junior, every opportunity to keep the starting job. Like, waited halfway through the season before he made the switch to Kendall Marshall as a freshman. And then the moment that he made the switch to Kendall Marshall, Larry Drew packed up his bags and left. Like, literally drove out of Chapel Hill, moved everything out of his apartment without telling anybody he had left the program. Like, just, oh, I'm not starting. Well, I'm no longer a part of this team. I'm out of here. So that one, and the famous play-by-play guy for UNC, Woody Durham, like lambasted him, like one of like the nicest guy ever. Just an ultimate takedown of him that next game. Thought it was very interesting. 843-652-3776. Brian, we know that you are an aggressive Packers fan. If you could disown one Packer, who would it be?
It's hard. They get a lot of good characters on their team, but
yeah,
I'm gonna have to go with
you guys. Do like if you are a Packers fan, that's a pretty likable organization. I mean, those are guys that do tend to be Packers lifers.
Yeah, we've had a few guys get in trouble with doing some of the lean or whatever it's called, but I mean, that's not really something to hate someone for. That's just their own personal issues. So I'll probably have to go with Greg Jennings, the way he left the team. I mean, I liked him when he was playing for the team. He was awesome, but taking shots at Aaron Rodgers.
Taking shots at the discount double check. That gets you riled up. Yeah, that's not a good look. When someone who's clearly that good at getting you the football, you should express some gratitude, especially because he probably got a better deal out of the Vikings than if he was catching footballs from someone other than Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, especially when you have Christian Ponder throwing it to you the next year.
Yes, yes indeed.
If I had to go someone else, though, I'd probably say Delonte West, causing the panic in Cleveland during the finals run.
All right. We don't know what Delonte West did or did not do, although that is one of the more entertaining rumors that can't be confirmed in sports in the past couple of years. Use Google if you don't know what we're talking about. Now, last segment, we were talking about jobs that you wouldn't want to have. Right now, I would not want to trade places with South Carolina AD Ray Tanner at all. Not at all. And Dean, who one call the day a couple of months ago, basically is extending his follow-through on his jump shot. He tweets at 1003 the team, like I said a couple of months back, Carolina won't win more than 5 games this year. Hashtag call of the day. Yeah, I can't pretend that I saw that coming. I mean, right now I see it crystal clear. Right now I see that they will be lucky to win an SEC game and get to 4 wins. If they get to 5, it's like, man, where is that upset coming in? How did they beat Tennessee is what I'm thinking. Like, how did Butch Jones horribly mismanage that clock? And or what kind of horrendous play calling was there on offense for Tennessee to lose? That's how they get to 5. Tennessee is very talented. I mean, I just don't see it. I got so fixated with this year's Carolina team, South Carolina, that, okay, they blew those 3 fourth quarter leads last year of 10 points or more. If they had just won 2 or 3 of those games, they would have been 9 wins or 10 wins. I got so fixated on, okay, last year's team was 7-6, but it really should have been more like 9-4. And if that were the case, how many people would be panicking right now? And the answer would be none. But that had absolutely nothing to do with this year's football team, which didn't have a quarterback. We didn't know at the time Connor Mitch wouldn't be ready to play or available to play with his health. And there were a lot of things that we didn't know. And I think that when looking at this South Carolina Gamecocks football team, there has been an abundance of NFL talent out there for years and years. I mean, you look at some of the classes that they had. I mean, they were producing near Alabama and LSU level talent 4 or 5 years ago. I mean, you're not seeing Marcus Lattimore's, Jadeveon Clowney's, Stephon Gilmore's out there. I mean, there just isn't that level of player. And it's odd because the scout and the rivals rankings haven't slipped over time, but it's evident that they don't have those overwhelming NFL players. And even last year, you look at some of the guys that they lost. I mean, Mike Davis, AJ Cann, Demir Byrd. I mean, those are really, really good football players that they don't have answers for. They don't have replacements for. And I don't quite know how the talent deficit started, but it's obvious looking at it. And so I got fixated on, okay, well, last year they should have won 9 or 10. That actually has no bearing on this year what they should be. And you got a true freshman quarterback behind a weak line who's getting pummeled before he really knows what's coming at him. And that's your one shot of giving anybody optimism for the rest of the season. Like, best case scenario for South Carolina right now is somehow getting to 5 wins and giving everybody a lot of confidence that Lorenzo Nunez is going to be the guy that brings the program back over the next 2 to 3 years. But you got to keep them upright. You got to keep them healthy. And they got to figure out how to get that SEC upset. They got to figure out how to pick up another win or two that people aren't expecting. While coaches don't even have homes to live in right now because of floods. And you've got a brutal schedule coming up. I mean, I have no idea how much their practices have been interrupted this week, but it can't be ideal. Like, there has to be some kind of change. And I mean, can you imagine trying to focus on that when the city that you live in is underwater and your athletic director is saying, hey, we're going to make a determination on Wednesday whether or not we are or aren't playing the game? That's got to be hard to focus. That's to be really hard.
I don't think the practice thing is going to be too big of an issue because I don't think it really matters how much they practice for this game. I don't think they stand too much of a chance to beat LSU.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want to know what's going to happen, I mean, look at footage of like bulldozers on YouTube, right? I mean, there is no art to what. I mean, I don't want to sound disrespectful to Leonard Fournette. I have all the respect in the world for him, but it's literally like you want to tackle me, but you're unable to. Like that's what he is doing to people. Like In LSU, I don't want to call them simple, but it's not like there's any elaborate schemes that they're throwing at people. They just have a massive offensive line. They're flush with 4- and 5-star talent out of high school. They're big, they're athletic, and they're going to run the football a million times. Like, I think I saw a stat where they're averaging less than 100 passing yards a game. Like, they have a miserable bottom 10, bottom 20 in FBS football kind of passing offense. But when you have a back that's averaging 215 a game by himself, then you don't really need that. Stop Mr. Fournette.
Yeah, I saw some crazy. I can't think of how many schools exactly. It's like he has more rushing yards than entire schools put together.
Well, yeah, I mean, two. If your favorite team is playing this weekend and someone says, I'm going to give you 215 yards on the ground, like, who are you to say no? Like, I mean, who's racking up more than that? Like, Georgia Tech is saying, no, we don't want that because our quarterback throws 5 times a game. Like, if you're a triple option team, you're turning that down because that means your offense is anemic. But if you're a team that strives for some kind of run-pass balance and you have 215 yards on the ground, that's a hell of a day.
Well, we were talking about it like a week ago that the parents in his little league or whatever it was called back then when he was 12 were on at him to be petitioned out of it because he was too good. Maybe the SEC coaches will try to change the rules so he can go pro a year early so they don't have to deal with him anymore.
Yeah. That topic now – Tom Sorensen in Charlotte, he basically needs to sue every journalist and every sports talk guy who is using this as a topic for Fournette because Tom Sorensen wrote the original. Like, he wrote the song that everyone else is covering right now. And that was his piece in the Charlotte Observer 3 years ago saying that Jadeveon Clowney should just sit out his third season in Columbia because he's already the number one draft pick. There's nothing that he could do that could dissuade anybody not to take him number one. He could only hurt himself. And you think about his third year in Columbia, he had a huge game against Clemson. I want to say he had 2 or 3 sacks against Clemson, but his season as a whole was not spectacular. And he missed the Kentucky game with a rib injury. People criticized him for not communicating well with the coaching staff, his motor, how hard he was practicing, all of those things. But can you blame the guy? He had that $30 million payday in the back of his mind. The only thing that could happen was losing that, right? I mean, he had that if he lived in a protective bubble for a year. The only possible outcome was losing it, right? Was either keeping it or losing it. And if he did nothing, he got to keep it. So by going out there and playing football, the only thing he was doing really was risking it. I mean, he couldn't get better than what he was doing. His team could do better. South Carolina could do better. But in terms of the end result in the draft, he was already the number one pick. And that amount of money was already slotted in. I mean, it's not the Sam Bradford days where you independently negotiate with the team how much money they're going to pay you on your rookie deal. I mean, these rookie deals now are slotted. They have exact values. So he knew exactly what he was worth, and the only outcome that could happen by playing was stay the same or lose it all. And he had kind of an uninspiring year, and he still got to keep it, even though the Texans knew that his body wasn't 100%. He had foot problems. He had knee problems. And that's going to be the same deal with Fournette. I mean, I hope that the guy stays healthier, but looking at LSU, I mean, Jennings and Harris haven't been able to move the ball through the air. They're eventually going to get to a game where they can't just run Fournette literally over everybody. Like, that Alabama game is going to be black and blue. I mean, you circle that game every year. And a lot of times these running back injuries, they're not what you would predict. It's not like, okay, he's going to try to carry the ball 35 times against Alabama. No wonder he got hurt. A lot of times they happen on cuts where no one's hitting them. So we can't predict if he'll ever get hurt or when that will happen. But it's going to be a bad look for LSU if something catastrophic happens to him in the next 2 or 3 years. And he's carrying a massive workload. And I don't know what the impetus is going to be for the NFL to change its rule or how long it's going to take. But you can take a look at that issue. Guys leaving pro for the NFL before their third year. That issue is going to win. I don't know what year. I don't know what athlete is going to have the courage and is going to face all the criticism for turning his back on his teammates. I don't know at what point it's going to happen. It seems like Fournette loves being a college football player. But it's at some point in time, that's going to change.
Well, especially with this all this concussion talk and saying that all these players have a shelf life, essentially. I mean, you can't tell them you can only play this many downs or however much for so long and them not want to get paid. Because if they know they only can play for 6 years, say, they're not going to spend three of it or two of it playing in college football making no money.
Yeah,
or
I mean,
$5,000 a year or whatever it is now.
The average shelf life for running back is like 3 or 4 years. The average rookie deal length is 3 or 4 years. So if he wants to get a second NFL contract that has substantial value, if he's that level of running back, then every year he's playing in college football is costing him money off of that second contract, which might be $10 million a year. I mean, it really is unfortunate, and it's unfortunate what it's going to take for that change to occur. Because if Fournette says, hey, I'm just going to go to IMG in Florida and not play for LSU this year, I mean, he's going to face all kinds of backlash for people that love the college system, people that say he's turning his back on his teammates, that he's selfish, he's greedy, all of these things, that he's not giving LSU what LSU's giving him in return. I mean, he's going to, whatever athlete takes that stand is going to do it. And it's interesting to me that no one has gone the CFL route and done that, right? Like Brandon Jennings said, I'm not going to play college basketball. I'm going to go play in Europe. And it didn't work out very well for him. He was still a lottery pick, but apparently he didn't get to play and it was hard for him to get paid. Those European teams aren't as on the up and up as the American teams are. Can you imagine LeBron being like, yeah, they didn't pay me last week? That would never happen. But I don't know when it's going to happen, but there's enough momentum for that as an issue that at some point in time it's going to change. It just makes no sense. I mean, it's a great tool for the professional general managers when they've got 3 years of tape to look at to evaluate somebody. 3 years of information to know that Doral Green Beckham's a meathead and you're taking a substantial risk drafting him. Right, he's the kind of guy that might go higher if you're allowed to go after a year or two that gets exposed because there's more information on him. The Justin Blackmans of the world, you find out more data on them when they stay in school. But that's really a simplicity for the NFL player, I mean for the NFL organization. And to me, that's not good enough to keep guys like Fournette and Clowney in college when they could clearly play in the NFL. Actually didn't intend on going down that road, but it's going to be a road that we go down as sports fans quite a bit in the future. Because it's just not going to go anywhere. There's always going to be a player like Fournette or Clowney that could play at the next level. And you look at the damage that is done to bodies in college football. I mean, the University of Oklahoma has people taking Toradol shots. And I mean, it's not surprising to me, but that's a lot of wear and tear on somebody's body, and when they can get millions of dollars for it, it just seems like they should be able to go out and do it. Anyways, 843-652-3776 is the number. Nick Saban, really feisty, coming off of his big-time win over Georgia. I kind of think they're the best team in football right now, regardless of whether they lost to Ole Miss. In terms of the team that I wouldn't want to play right now in college football this weekend, I wouldn't want to play Bama. Does he have a point to his rant against the media? And both Martellus Bennett and his brother had some spectacular comments to the media. Which one was better? That's coming up next in Sound Off. Back on Sound Off, Sports Radio 100.3 of the Team. I'm Lewis Woodard. Sound Off is presented in part by Philanthropist.com. Exact Match domain names are the foundation for a business's success online. Exact Match domains receive more traffic, easier recognition, and are better positioned in search results. Check out philanthropist.com. Now, we were talking about Leonard Fournette last segment and the ongoing debate that journalists and media members are having about whether or not college football is even worth it for him because of the wear and tear on his body as a college running back. Texter writes in, with the diminished role of the running back in the NFL, Fournette will not be the first pick overall. If I said that last segment, I apologize. I didn't mean that. I mean, he's going to be a high pick. I mean, you look in the pantheon of running backs drafted over the last 5 or 10 years, you'll see Trent Richardson 3rd overall, Gurley 10th overall. I mean, those are the highest drafted guys. You see some guys, Mark Ingram is pulled in the 20s. It's hard to be a first round draft pick at running back. And a big part of that, though, in response to the texter, is wear and tear on a player's body from earlier in their life. That is something that NFL talent evaluators look at all the time. How many carries did this guy have in college? We like his tires right now, but how much tread are they going to have left in 2 or 3 years? And it is interesting that it hasn't really come up as a media topic before this. I mean, Monty Ball and Melvin Gordon. I mean, those two guys were basically asked to carry Wisconsin to 10-win seasons, like literally on their back. Put the team on my back. Like, those guys were given the football just relentlessly. Relentlessly. And I'm sure they wanted it too, though. That's the thing. I mean, when you're super competitive, you want to win football games. You want to be the star of your university. I'm not saying that they would have even liked 15 carries a game, or that's going to change the importance of the running back in the NFL, but it just is the perfect storm for it to be a conversation. When you have a guy that is in that Trent Richardson Gurley class in terms of NFL prospect. Now, I think people are hoping that Fournette's a better pro than Trent Richardson, who worked out with the Buffalo Bills today. Because he hadn't been a very good pro, but he's going to be drafted in the first half of the first round, unless something catastrophic happens. He would have to gain a lot of weight and run like a 4.8 to not be drafted in the first half of the first round. I mean, I'm just trying to think of ways that he couldn't be a Gurley level pick. I mean, even Gurley, that would have been really interesting if Gurley were 100%, how much higher than 10 he would have been drafted, because he was picked 10th with an ACL. But that's going to be just rare when you see a running back in the top half of the draft because of how short the shelf lives are for those guys. Now, Nick Saban, triumphant. Not just beat the dogs, but really kicked their teeth in on the road. You'd think he'd be in a better mood with the media. That's not the case.
Well, I say the same thing as when you all buried us last week, all right, and all that, that it really doesn't matter what you think. It really doesn't matter what you say. And I'm hoping that nobody on our team is playing for you. I hope they're playing for each other and their team and what they want to accomplish and not what you think. Because that's not certainly what I'm doing. I'm coaching and working for our players and our team to be as good as it can be. And if that's not pleasing to somebody else, it's not pleasing to somebody else. I said before, I believe in our team. I do believe in our team. And we're going to work hard to make our team better. And I hope the players respond the right way. And it's not going to be for you. The fans, yes. Because if it was up to you, we're 6 foot under already. We're dead and buried and gone. Gone.
Did they win? Or did they get dominated by Georgia? I'm not sure, listening to that audio. Saban's on a mission, man. I think part of, at Alabama, how hard must it be to motivate yourself each and every day? I mean, I know that you should love football, that you should want to win for yourself, want to win for your teammates, have pride in your program, but it's got to be way harder to motivate yourself on the mountaintop when you are, what was it, 78 straight games, they were the Vegas favorites. I mean, I'm sure it was fun for them that one day to have that underdog mentality to say, hey, America thinks you're going to lose this game. Las Vegas thinks you're going to lose this game. That was probably fun for them to be able to play the bulletin board card. Now, Martellus Bennett compared Jay Cutler to Jesus, and Michael Bennett, his brother, the pass rusher for the Seahawks, said that Paul Allen is the 17th richest man in the world. He needs to pay Cam Chancellor.
Andy blamed Matt Stafford for killing JFK, pretty much.
It's a pretty spectacular media performance from the same family in the same day. I mean, Cutler has, many things have been said about him in many different ways. That's probably the most creative Jay Cutler comparison I think that's happened. So, personally, I would not compare him to Jesus. But in terms of outlandish comments, I would say that Martellus wins the Bennett family discussion.
He's definitely not the savior.
Wow. Da-dunch. All right, Sports Talk's coming up next. I'm sure they'll have more on the Columbia situation with regards to whether or not the LSU game is going to be played. Also, more on South Carolina and Clemson. Those guys do it best. Corn Blue McCreary coming up right here.